Hi, it's Tony Nash here. It's Plugged and Unplanned, a series that I do with authors and people who are in business to talk about life, their book, and whatever else comes up. So there's no planning that goes into our conversation. And today I have Natasha Hawker, who's written a book, From Hire to Fire and Everything in Between. And the subtitle says, Managing the Employee Lifecycle, Hire, Manage, Wellbeing, and Exit. And it's great to actually have a woman here with me, because all the other ones I've done thus far, not many, have been blokes.
That's so great to be here.
Welcome.
Thank you very much for having me, Tony.
Pleasure. So, and it is important when you think about it today with, your book's about hiring and firing people and engaging employees, but just with the whole Me Too and the equality and equal wages. It's just so great to have you. And my plan is to have more women and make sure that we hear from everyone and everyone's background. So just on that then, what tell me a little bit about yourself and how you've written a book.
Yes. So my career actually started in banking and finance, working in dealing rooms. And if you want to talk about inappropriate behaviour with women, I saw some stuff there in the 90s when greed was good and used to go for lunch for an hour and a half and not come back. And my career started in banking and finance. I then became a recruitment consultant. So we have a similar background there. I know your career started in that. And I did that for a couple of years, and I realised I was good once I had a client, but sales were always a problem. Once I had a client, they were mine for life, you know, and I enjoyed that recruitment, but I wanted more. So I was studying personnel, as it was known then, at TAFE, and I got my lucky break and I joined Accenture, and I had 12 years with Accenture. I had a fabulous time with them, traveling the world, working down in India for a team that had never worked for a woman before. I had got engaged to a man I'd met 3 weeks before, the night before I left, and so there was a whole lot going on. So I had a great time with them, with 12 years, and then came back to Australia, newly married, newly pregnant, and then started my own business. And for flexibility, which is a big thing for, I think, many women who are balancing that career or entrepreneurship and a family. And I started Employee Matters 7 years ago, and it's grown and grown, and now it's my fourth baby. I have three babies and my business baby, and it's a really important one for me.
So, I mean, given where we are today and with what we're experiencing in terms of recruitment, just the general dialogue in the media, all of the allegations and taking advantage of women or taking advantage of people, what have you seen change then over those decades that you've been involved in the industry?
Yeah, there's a lot of change. I think, you know, sexual harassment, if we talk about specifically the Me Too movement, sexual harassment has been there for a long time, and we've definitely made some improvement. I personally was involved in my own sexual harassment complaint now 20 odd years ago, and I can remember sharing it with the girls I played netball with, and seven of that team of nine, seven of them had experienced sexual harassment in the workplace. No one had ever complained about it, though. They just saw it as part of it and just got on with it. So, you know, obviously now we have legislation to protect us, and that's really important. But there are still some pockets where sexual harassment and, you know, some of those inappropriate behaviours still exist. The businesses that are doing it really well at the moment, Tony, are those businesses where leaders lead by example and they set the benchmark that this behaviour is not appropriate in the workplace. They run training sessions, and where there is ever a complaint raised, it's dealt with quickly and appropriately, you know, with an investigation, and it's sorted. There are obviously sometimes those bigger cases where it's a lot more potentially serious or sinister, and you really need to take those seriously, because as a business owner you have a duty of care to provide a safe workplace for your employees, and that includes providing an environment where they're safe from sexual harassment, bullying, and so on. So there has been that change. When the Me Too movement came out, I wasn't surprised, and I predicted at the time we'd see a massive lift in the number of sexual harassment complaints in the workplace, and we have. And the reason for that is awareness and acceptance. So people are now much more inclined to go, hang on a minute, this has happened to me. I don't think it's appropriate. I'm going to raise a concern. Having said that, there's still a whole lot of people who are very quiet about it, and it's never raised. And that's why that training is so important, so people are educated and they know what they can and can't do. So that's what I've seen around the Me Too movement. Bullying is another one that's really increased of late, awareness around that, but there's no money attached. There's no financial compensation benefit to a bullying complaint. So that has limited some of the interest in going for a bullying complaint because the individual can't get any cash out of doing that. So, but still, you need to protect your employees and you need to look after them. So we're seeing some changes, but it's probably not fast enough. In terms of the pay differences, it's a really big one and it's quite frightening. I actually went to the Walkout at Work march. I was happened to be in the city when it was on and I was really both surprised and shocked at how many people turned up. And there were probably only 70. It felt like there were more police there than the actual people protesting, men and women, but majority of women. And the reason that the organizer said she'd had huge social media support, but people had actually contacted and said they were actually afraid that if they walked out as a female that there would be repercussions for that, which if that's true, that's very sad. But we just have, even at graduate level, huge disparity in what our salaries are for graduates. Even when we get out of uni at the same time, men are typically paid more, even when their careers that, you know, are appropriate for men and women, you know, to earn high salaries. And it just gets worse. And the finance industry is the worst. It's 38% differential between what a man and a female gets paid for the same role. And there's reasons for that. You know, it comes about because, you know, you go to work, you fall in love with somebody, you know, usually the man's earning more at the beginning. So the logical decision for both parties is, well, me as a female, because I'm earning less, I'll take the time off to look after the children. So she takes her time off and then she comes back and then she has another baby and she's now even earning less than what she was before compared to her partner. And so she takes time off again and there's implications to superannuation and so on. So, you know, we've got a long way to go. And I think having openness and, you know, awareness or even of businesses where they're actually doing audits and making sure that people are getting paid the same for doing the same role at the same level of performance, I think is really important.
So in your work, are you being brought into this conversation or are you talking now more as a spectator watching what it's all happening? How are you involved in this?
It's starting to change. Initially, Tony, I have to say a lot of our clients, it was around the compliance side of things. As we're moving more into the mid-market, which is what we're servicing more now, it's much more we're getting called in, for example, restructures to make sure that people are being dealt with appropriately, salary audits to make sure that people are paying the right amount of money. So we're starting to get more and more of that work. But at the beginning, you know, it was very much we were dealing with a small market, the very much small to medium business client, and they just didn't have anything in this space. They were lucky to be compliant with their modern award obligations, let alone think about, you know, sexual harassment in the workplace or anything like that.
So is it more reactive at the moment or more proactive? How's that kind of playing out?
Very reactive. And I think the top end of town are starting to get more aware of it. I think a lot of them are starting to do self-imposed audits to make sure that they're paying, because the reality is it's a war for talent out there. It is an extremely tight applicant market, which you'd be familiar with from your days as a recruiter. And so if you want to win that war for talent, you need to be able to make sure that you have a great employee value proposition, that you're going to be attracting the best and the brightest, whether they're male or female, to your organization. And I think those organizations that have fabulous stories to tell about the fact that they, you know, pay attention and they're auditing to make sure that they don't have those pay differentials will be the ones that win the war for talent in the long term.
Mm. So you as a small business owner, how many people work for you?
12. There's 12 of us in total.
Okay. So small business owner, the priorities of running your business versus some of the organizations that you're consulting for who have they've got the funds, they've got the infrastructure, they've got the agenda to address that. How is the small to medium-sized businesses of the world, are we all, I mean, Booktopia's got over 200 people, so we're a medium size. But are we all, you know, it's just too much, we're really trying to get just our normal work done and we're neglecting it? How do you find that playing out?
I think at the small end, Tony, there is a real, they don't have time, their survival mode at that very small end. It's about survival. But as you get bigger and as you get to your size, I think more and more organizations are going, actually, we need to get more savvy about this. Let's get some skills in. So, you know, that's a lot around why we started Employee Matters, because we're able to plug in a HR manager who has between 10 and 25 years experience, who can come into an organization, do a discrete piece of work, or stay in there as their outsourced HR expert with all the tools and templates already done. So it's a very cost-effective way for a mid-market business to access great skills that they either don't need on a full-time basis, nor could they necessarily afford. And they're starting to get more and more savvy. I think, you know, the fact that we've got to squeeze wages will start to increase very shortly because of that shortage of talent. So you'll find people will start, they'll think that that's the main reason they can get someone is if they start to up the salary. But what I would suggest to your small to medium business owners is that really what attracts an employee to an organization, number one, is actually a flexible workplace, which surprises most people. Salary is about 7, but it's all around, you know, people are attracted to culture now. They're attracted to a leader. They want to work for great organizations that have a purpose. They want an organization that's going to give back. Salary is important. We've all got bills to pay. But that flexible workplace, both for males and females, is incredibly attractive. So, you know, I always say, I used to think I worked very hard when I worked for Accenture, but nowhere near as hard as working for this boss, who happens to be me. Having said that, I've got more flexibility than I've ever had. So I have a very important meeting on 2 o'clock on a Friday, and it just happens to be my kids' assembly, and I'm there every time I need to be, which I wouldn't necessarily have that flexibility if I worked in a corporate. So where corporates are getting more savvy is when they're able to say, we want that flexible workplace. We want to be able to attract, and it's not about a bottom on a seat between 9 and 5. It's about getting outcomes and results, and that's what's really going to, you know, get us the best results as a business.
So how come there is a talent shortage now? What's happened?
Yeah, I've been giving this a lot of thought. And if I go back, I think it's been a culmination of events. If we go back, as you would know from a recruitment perspective, there's cycles. There's a tight applicant market and then there's a loose applicant market. Tight being there's a very short talent pool shortage. And then a loose applicant means we've got way more people than jobs. And it's those ebbs and flows over the years. Having said that, if we go back to 2009, when the financial crisis hit, prior to that, things were starting to tighten up. So the first thing that gets cut is training. So people don't train anyone anymore. Then you start to lose people from the market. And we lost a lot of people through redundancies with the global financial crisis, even though Australia was not hit as badly as many other organizations or countries, rather. And then obviously things started to improve and people started to hire back, but then there was a bit of a skills gap. They hadn't been working in that career for a while, or they hadn't been being upskilled to be able to do the job. And so what I'm finding now is that we've got to this point where roles are also changing with technology, and we're going to find some roles actually disappear and other roles will start to become more important. I don't have that concern that, you know, whole parts of the workforce are going to be wiped out. There are going to be industries that are impacted. Classic one to talk about is obviously driverless cars and the impact to truck drivers and cabs. You know, we're seeing it already in the US and it will come here as well. So I think as a result of all that, it's a bit of a perfect storm, and we haven't got great talent. So an example being, if I went out and hired an executive assistant 6 years ago, I would have got 100 applications, of which 20 could do the job standing on their head. Didn't matter which one went in, I knew I'd get a placement. Now, if I put a similar ad out, I will get 20 applications, which 2 can do the job. 1's brilliant, 1's very average. So if you don't move quickly and if you don't look after your candidates and you don't give a great candidate experience, you will struggle to hire. So employers need to get more creative and more clever about how they're going to attract people to work for them so that they choose you rather than your competitors.
So that's a good one. So where is the internet app in terms of like using Seek and other job sites to source candidates versus having to advertise, get nothing, and realize you got to go through a recruitment agency, which is much more expensive? Where how's that playing out at the moment?
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of disruption to the recruitment industry in general, and technology is driving a lot of that. You've got a lot of new players coming in, Recruit Loops one, but still predominantly people go to Seek to find their roles. Having said that, that's a very, what we call, when you go to Seek, you're looking at the active market, the people, Tony, that are actively looking for a job. They've come back from Christmas and they've decided they've had enough and they want out. It's usually a peak of recruitment activity around this time. But what I think we need to get smarter at as small to medium business owners is creating talent pools, thinking about hiring your next 10 people now. And so LinkedIn is a great way of doing that. So one of the ways we've done it is we use a closed-in group on LinkedIn where we have our previous Employee Matters employees, our current Employee Matters employees, and potentially our future as well. And so they get to start to know, love, and trust us through working with us on that closed group. And then when we need to hire, the people that are attracted to that group are potentially hires for us, so we'll go and tap them on the shoulder. So building talent pools is a very clever way to start to know that you're going to be able to go out and reduce your hiring cycle from potentially 100 days down to 10, because you have a pool of candidates already pre-screened and ready to go when you're ready to go.
Just explain that, because I haven't used that yet.
Yes.
So you've got your LinkedIn business,
yep,
which then you've segmented up previous employees. Hopefully they're all very happy and moved on to bigger and better things and parted ways. Well, those that are working for you. But what are you doing? So those that you're actually doing research to see who could work, but do they not know that you've added them to that list? Or have you invited them to become part of your...
Invited them to become part of that. But what I would suggest for your listeners is a great way to do it is to start to potentially, if you know, for example, you have a lot of what we would call broadly contact center employees. So your people, you call it the happiness center, where you're creating happiness for your...
Those guys, as you walk through, you saw them.
Yeah, so I saw them coming in. Now, I imagine since I've listened to your podcast, you had 130, you've now got 200. That section will most likely grow, and you're going to get some standard attrition, which the healthier level of attrition is between 10 and 20%. What you would be doing if I was consulting to you, is to start to build a group of potential contact center employees, your customer service people out there, and you actually are very open about it. You say, we're growing and we think we might want to hire you in the future. We don't know. So we'd like to take you through some recruitment tests. You get to know us, we get to know you, and you basically take them all the way up to the contract. And everyone's very aware of it, and it may come off and it may not, but what it does massively is reduce your time to hire, because you've got this little pool of candidates where you just go, right, Fred, you're up next. Would you like a job? And Freddie either says yes or no. And it massively reduces that recruitment time. Mm. And so it's a very powerful way, but it's also going to increase the ability for them to say yes. Because as a recruiter, when you're going through that process, you're getting to know the client, they're getting to know other competitors. But when you've got that talent pool situation, then they get to know you and you're more likely to get a yes than your competitors that maybe hasn't treated them particularly well, hasn't got back to them when they said they were going to get back to them, you know, and that relationship and the trust is already broken, where this talent pool option is around creating, you know, that trust and that awareness of your business and that understanding. They've got, I want to work for those guys.
So on that, I mean, that's great. That's a great tip. Thank you.
My pleasure.
How many as a percentage of all companies are doing it? I mean, most probably don't have the time to do it because they've still got very large workloads, but it makes sense to do that. Are we at the... at the very tip of people using it in that way?
Corporates. So I'm all about, let's learn from the corporate world. They've got the bigger budgets to do it. They're all doing it. Talent pooling is a big part. They have people who are just, that's their whole job, is nurturing and building talent pools. It's very new and not a lot of people are talking about it in the small to mid market. It doesn't have to be ridiculously onerous though. You know, you could get us to come in and set it up, or you can set it up yourself. And it's mainly about communicating and touch points with them. And the mere fact that they feel like they're part of that talent pool is going to help with the attraction as well, because they feel special that they've been selected to be considered as part of that talent pool and so on. But very much the big end of town do it, and they're smart with it, and that's what's helping them reduce. So great example of his corporator who I know very well, were looking for agribankers, and that was their most critical role in their business. Paid about 75K a year. It's not a big, it's not like the CEO role, but they knew it was taking them 100 days on average once they lost one to go and find one. Now, if you work out what the day rate of that is, the cost to the business, that's massive. And now that they've built talent pools of agribankers, they now take 10 days. To recruit versus 100. So that's saving them a massive amount of money. And also recruitment fees. They're not paying recruitment fees because they've got their own pool ready to go.
Very good. Mm. What other tips or things that are floating around at the moment that you can see happening in the world we live in?
Yeah, I think there's a shift between, and I heard it on one of your other podcasts around, he was talking about power. I think there was very much a them and us when we talk about the employees and the employer. And I'm all about creating employee assets. I believe that Australian business owners are the hardest working Australians that we have, and they're the big risk takers. And I believe they actually deserve a workforce of employees that treasure their business as much as they do. Imagine if you had 200 employees that, you know, think about and love your business, Booktopia, as much as you do, what the power of that would be. And you also deserve an asset there, an employee asset of 200 people that adore your business. And what we find that happens when you've got that is you create enormous productivity and profitability increases. And so I am all about, yes, HR, there's a nine steps of the employee life cycle, which is what I write around in the book. And on the left side is all the compliance stuff, you know, make sure that you're compliant with Fair Work, make sure you've got modern award in the office and so on. The right-hand side of the employee lifecycle methodology is around how you get the lift. How do you get a highly engaged team that will stay here till 11 o'clock at night, not because you're paying them, Tony, but they're so bought into your vision, your values, and your mission that they want to do that. They want to be a part of it. So I think the businesses that I'm seeing that are getting the most lift at the moment are the ones who are building highly engaged, communicate brilliantly, leaders that people want to follow. One of the big tips I would always say to business owners is people don't leave businesses, they leave leaders. And I often find that people are often put into management roles, they don't have the skills. If we could just get managers to do three things better, hire better, manage better, fire better, you're going to lift productivity and you're going to lift profitability. But often we put them in that role of manager and they haven't got the skills. And we get them to still do this really full-on technical part of their job, where if they're managing a team of 20, that's a big time component if you want to make sure that you're maximizing their output. So I think the businesses that are doing that better are starting to get the competitive edge. And I think, you know, businesses who measure their engagement, who talk to their employees, who run focus groups, are seeing the benefits of hearing. Because you think about it, they're on the coalface. You know, when you start to get more senior in your business, you know, it's hard to keep on touch of everything that's happening in the business. So those businesses that ask get great results.
That's a great way to finish week one of our first episode with Natasha Hawker. Thank you, and we'll see you all in a week's time.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.